Accession number 27189, Reel 6.
Colonel Poulson, Reel 6. You were saying that the cars that you thought were carrying reinforcements were not carrying many German forces. It was the director of Norsk Hydro and the head of the local security and people like that.
Yes.
And what did you do when they came up the road? Were you able to find cover to...
No, you see, we were not following the main road.
Ah.
We were following an old, smaller road parallel to the main road. And our plan was to go down to where the... What do you call this thing going up the mountainside?
The cable car.
Yes, but it's going in the air.
Yes, it's the cable car. Yes.
Okay, if we're going... And under that cable car, there, when I built it, I had to make a road up the mountainside. Oh. So our plan was to go down, bypass the cable car station, come up on the road, follow it up, and bypass the top station.
Mm. Were you moving on ski?
No, we were moving on foot.
Ah.
We had our skis, but we moved on foot.
So you're having to carry the ski?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So we had nothing had happened there. There was no Germans.
How were you moving? Were you moving in single file?
Yes.
Yeah. What sort of intervals did you have between you and that?
Couple of yards, maybe.
Oh, so you were really bunched. You were quite close.
Yeah, it was very close. Mm. So then we got up. We bypassed the top station and got up over the timberline up on the plateau. And now it was much colder. It was a hard wind blowing. And then we started to move. You couldn't see. There was no sheet, left no tracks, not at all, because the snow was frozen.
Oh, it was hard snow.
So, and it was blowing rather hard, so we were not afraid of being followed by German forces. They wouldn't have been able to move at all up there. It was rather hard work against the wind.
Where were you heading for when you got back up to the...
We're heading for the hut at the place called Langsjö, which we also had used when on the approach march.
How far?
Far from Rjukan.
What
one and a half, two Norwegian miles, I think.
That'd be about 6 English miles.
Pardon?
That'd be about 6 to 8 English miles.
And then we arrived there, the weather was worse, so we just went to bed. No guards, nothing. We were quite sure that we were safe in that weather. But our plan was to stay a night there and then go back to Svensby to our girl's base. But we weren't able to move outside. We had to stay, I think we stayed there 2 nights before we were able to leave.
What sort of hut was that? Was that like your hut at Svensby?
Pardon?
What sort of hut was it, the one you were trapped in?
A large hunting lodge.
Yeah, so it's bigger.
Bigger, yes. Mm. Belongs to my older sister's man.
Oh. Did it have any food in it, or fuel, or other things that you needed?
Yes, in the bottle of whiskey was the truth of the three used.
Had that been arranged by your friends that they would stock the hut before you went
up
there?
No, no.
They didn't know you were going to be using it.
No, he didn't know anything about this. No. Nobody else in my family. But we, when we got back to Svensby, it was still bad weather. In Hellberg, wasn't with us because he was going, as I said, to Rukan to collect the latest intelligence. He was in civilian clothes. So when he got to meet us in Fjordsbladet, we brought with us his uniform, and he put on that uniform and left his civilian clothes in Fjordsbladet. So he had to go back to Fjordsbladet to get his civilian clothes. And because of the bad weather, he was not able to join us, and he lost his map and so on. So he went after a while alone across the Hardangervidda over to Ustavose, or was another station on the Bergensbahn, and took the train to Oslo. And he and I had arranged that we were going to meet in Oslo after the operation and decide what we were going to do, stay on in the country or go back to England. Gunnerside went on skis in full uniform, crossed Norway over to the Swedish border, went back to England. And I met, as I said, Hilbert, met in Oslo.
How did you get to Oslo?
I went on skis to over to Krøsherad, or this railway there, and took the train to Oslo.
Did you have
any? For we had arranged that for a week we were going to meet to go to a certain place at the Majorstuen in Oslo. And I think the second time I was there, Hilbert was there too.
Did you have any difficulty with your journey to Oslo?
No.
What about the
Well, I was the sheriff up in the valley here. I made a great mistake when I got down up in Numenal at Vegli. I had met some people further up, and they said they didn't know anything about what happened to Vemork. So late in the evening I went into a small not hotel, but
guest house.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, and to stay there for the night. And this was reported to the local sheriff, and he and his assistant come to inspect me. But I had my papers. Mm-hmm. So. When he left, I asked him what I was looking for, and he said something has happened at Vemork. So I said, "Well, I hope you have luck with you to find these men." No, he said, "I think they are armed. I would rather not meet them." and I was sitting on the bed with my pistol in my pocket.
What happened to the other? What did the other members of Graus do? Did they go in other directions?
Haugland, my radio operator in Finland, they stayed on. In not at Svensby, but they went further west. Haukeli stayed on with Kjellstrup. And Gunnarside.
They went to Sweden.
Went to Sweden. So and Hellberg decided. He also wanted. It was up to us. We could do whatever we liked to do. And Hellberg also wanted to stay on. But I wanted to go back to England.
Why was that? Why did you want to go back?
Well, why did I want to go back? I don't think I had had enough to do why I wanted to go back. But as you know, Hellberg went back up to Arangvida to take care of some equipment laying around, and he at that time, and this is 3 weeks or more after the operation, the Germans put on a large search of the Arangvida plateau, and he has his rather well he made the German at Skruken and has quite a narrow escape.
What did you do to get back to England? How did you do that?
At that time, the resistance movement in Norway had at least a few escape routes to Sweden, and I knew a man in Oslo who was from Rjukan, and I contacted him, and he arranged this for me.
What was the route? Was it on foot? Was it by train or by other?
Well,
means?
I went down to Fredrikstad,
yeah,
in Østfold, and by boat over to the Swedish coast.
What sort of boat was this? Was it a fishing boat or
a small fishing boat?
Small, yeah. Were the Germans patrolling the fjord to?
Not as far as I know.
But
they were put ashore on. We did discover that we were put ashore on a small island. And how were we going to come to Sweden from there? And we didn't know is this island on Norwegian or Swedish side of the border. But we made up a large. It wasn't far over to the Swedish coast. But we made up a large fire and crossed our fingers and hoped that the people coming out to look for what this was Swedes and not Germans. It was quite a number of people.
I was going to ask how many of you were in your party?
7 or 8, I think.
Had you known any of them before?
No, I hadn't. I didn't know any of them.
And what happened when you lit the fire?
We could see that a boat was coming, crossing over to us. there were Swedish police, or I think there were police. Not army or navy. And then I went to Stockholm, stayed there for a week or more. And at that time, I was able to get to England by plane.
How did the Swedes receive you when the Swedish policemen arrived in their boat? What did they say? What did they do?
They were very, very, very friendly. And at that time, quite a number of people left Norway and crossed over to Sweden. And I don't remember names, but there was a small camp where Norwegians were taken care of.
Yeah.
But I had a, I think I had a code word or something to Norwegian or English embassy in Stockholm. At least the man in charge at the camp found Stockholm, and I was put on the train. But I arrived in England, I think, a week or so later than Kundersheim. And went back to Scotland. And stayed on until the autumn of 44, and went back to Norway.
What were you doing in Scotland before the autumn of 44? What was your main activity?
Well, you know, in Scotland, we had three nice places in the Cairngorm area. And there was a British commandant there, and British logistic people and so on. But there was also a Norwegian, it was in charge of the people. I was made his second in command. So I had much to do with training and so on.
What sort of training was going on there at that time?
Well, I think the people in Company Linge, they went through all those SOS courses, and most of them, they're also very good courses. But up in Scotland, but I think the reason for a Norwegian man in charge was that there wasn't much training there. So our job was really being short of training.
How many men at a time would you have actually coming through for training? Were you getting a steady flow of recruits, and where were they from?
We didn't. When I was there, there was very few new recruits. I think later on, after I left, a hell of a lot of people come up there for training. But it was a question, you know, some were lucky, they got jobs back in Norway. Some were unlucky and stayed there for weeks, months, years, without any. And then without taking part in any operations. Then it was very important to have something to do.
What sort of things could you find them to do then if you were having to keep them occupied?
Weapon training, leader training, you know, SOE, they trained people very thoroughly and very well. But there wasn't much leader training. I mean, how to lead men in the field. There was mostly individual training.
Who was doing the instruction? Were all your instructors Norwegian?
Pardon?
Who were your instructors? Were they all Norwegians?
In Scotland?
Yes.
Yes, yes. Mm.
When you came back from the operation, were you debriefed?
Yes.
Who did the debriefing?
Well, actually, maybe debriefing isn't the right word. I sat down to write my report. Mm. And certainly I was debriefed, yes.
Mm. Was there any face-to-face debriefing, or was it merely a written account that you gave?
Well, yeah, I remember, yes, I think so. No, it wasn't. When I got back, I told what has happened in general terms, and then I sat down and wrote a short report.
Who was actually commanding up in Scotland? You were second in command. Who was in charge?
Captain, at that time it was Captain Sandvik. Mm-hmm.
What
was his name?
What was his background? What had he been doing? What was he like?
What are you after?
Where was he from? How had he ended up in Scotland? Did you know what he'd been doing and what sort of man he was?
Why he was ending up in Scotland, I don't know. I believe he was recruited.
Had he been an army?
He was an army man, yes.
Army man before the war?
Yes, yes. He was an officer in the Norwegian army.
Do you know what had happened to him in 1940, where he'd been or what he'd been doing?
I don't remember. No. I don't remember. No. I've certainly known, but I don't remember any longer.
So you were involved in organising the training and so forth. Were there any changes to the training that happened while you were there as second in command? Were there any changes to the training that happened while you were in Scotland, in second in command?
Well, yes, I think it was. I don't think the training up there had been. Had only been individual training. Mm. And the British up there didn't have any instructors.
Oh.
Not as far as I can remember. Mm. If you were going to train, you were sent to a course to another place. But we were arranging our own training. I mean, the outdoor life was a very important thing for us, and the opportunity in the Cairngorm areas were very good indeed for that kind of training.
Would this be survival training and that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. How was it that you went back to Norway? You said you went back in the autumn. What happened?
In 1944, everybody knew that the Germans were going to lose the war sooner or later. And in Norway, it was very important to protect Norwegian industry against German demolition in case of an Allied invasion or German capitulation or German going back to Germany. So at that time there was quite a number of schemes for doing this. And the power stations at Rjukan, Notodden, here in Numedal, Hakavik, was very, very important, because I think 60% of all electricity here in the southern part of Norway come from this area. Then you know Metro Tromsø. He was very keen on this, and he has come up with a plan, Operation Sunshine, to take care of this in a large geographical area containing these industry and power stations. All the Milorg home forces in this area were going to be his. He was taking over all those forces. And Tromstad chose me as his second in command for that operation.
So the aim was to protect the power stations?
Protect the power stations and other industry in this area.
Mm. What was the overall outline plan then? Would it have been for the Milorg to put guards on these places? Was that the idea?
The idea was to, we were divided into three areas. The Rjukan area, called Moonlight, the Kongsberg Numedal area called Starlight, and the third one was Notodden area called Lamplight, and Tromstad, and we had a British liaison officer with us too, Captain Lynn. He was half Norwegian, actually. He was a very good man. Tromstad made his headquarters up in the Møsvann area, and Skinneland, who has stayed in the area since the heavy water operation started up, he was going to be his radio operator. Tromsø was killed by a traitor in 45, so as second in command I took over this operation, and in many ways this was more interesting than the heavy water operation for me.
Yes.
So we got for England, but particularly after Christmas, we got all the arms, all the equipment we needed. I don't remember how many containers we got and so on. But at least when we mobilized in 45, when Germany